All right, so the topic for this fourth in the series is authority of a secular government in a halachic state of Israel. I want to thank Shimi for making the copies and making this possible, as well as for Eli Bienenstock for getting the ball rolling to start the series. And I hope, God willing, that after the summer, when we get to Elul, maybe we'll renew with another mini-series to see what happens with the school, with the shul schedule. But the question here is this. Right? Government has many roles. Right? Government is administrator of communal services. Government is the tax authority to fund the services to the community. Government is an international representative of the population. They negotiate treaties. Government is the legislator and the enforcer of law. What I wanted to talk about is really the last item on the list. Might halacha recognize the power of a secular government to create and enforce binding legislation in Israel? That's the question. You know, it's very funny because sometimes when you say this and you bring the topic up to people, they just assume it has to be a melech. It has to be a king. It can't be anything else. But once you think about that a little bit, you realize how silly that sounds. Right? Why is it silly to assume that the government that the Torah wants is a monarchy? The whole thing was bidyavid, right? It's presented in the Torah as when you say, I will place a king upon me, and when they do actually say it, and they go to Shmuel, it was the Haftarah L'Hashavas, right? When they go to Shmuel and say, we want a melech, he reads them the riot act. Now, you could say, and indeed the Mefarshim do say, there are two different ways to ask for a king. If you want a king who's going to guide you in a proper path, then it's a good thing. If you want a king, because everybody's got kings, and it looks impressive to the neighbors, and that's another story. So there are justifications certainly that can be brought. But fundamentally, it's a very strange thing to assume that because there's an institution of melech, therefore the tzibor, the community, is no longer allowed to govern itself in any other way. The question is only, really, what sort of government authority is able to compel minorities or compel individuals to follow that governor? That's really the question. Who has binding authority? And just to show that there's a real need to be flexible in terms of who we define and who qualifies as a legislative authority, take a look at the first source. This is always a shocker. It's a story in the Gemara of Mitzia, Daf Pei Gimel Amud Beis, regarding, of all people, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. Right? And really, that doubles the shock value of the story. The story itself is Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon, son of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai, the one who, when they came out of the cave, was looking everywhere and burning things and so forth. So he became a police officer for the government, and he caught Jewish thieves on behalf of the government, and the government was going to execute them. And the people said, "What are you doing? How in the world can you do that?" And his answer was, "I'm getting rid of the thorns in the vineyard," and he had a justification for it. But fundamentally, it's a very strange. It's a very strange concept to see Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon doing this. So the Ritva discusses this. If you take a look at source number one, he says the Hadid Da'in. I added in the words in brackets. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon below Eidim v'Hasra v'Shlo b'Zman Sanhedrin. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon is effectively judging without witnesses, without warnings, without anything. And there's no Sanhedrin in his day. Sha'aniyacha, this was different. Why? Deshlicha demalkohu, he was an emissary of the king. Umidinei amalchus la'arok below Eidim v'hasra liyaser ha'olam, and one of the laws of the land was indeed that they would kill people without witnesses and without a warning in order to bring people in line. K'mo shereinu b'David shara ger amaleki, just like David does with that odd story of the ger amaleki, the fellow who reports having killed Shaul. So therefore, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon is justified in working on behalf of the Roman government. We're now going to make a hekesh, right? We're going to link David HaMelech and the Roman authorities. I can't think of a stranger way to introduce this topic than with this observation of the Ritva justifying Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon becoming an officer on behalf of the Roman government. Granted that the Jews should not be stealing, and I hope we can agree on that. Nonetheless, the idea that you're capturing them for an authority that's going to execute them for theft is, I think, very, very odd. And it says we need to have a better understanding about not the source of government authority. So what we're going to do, God willing, is outline three legal theories with different visions of the nature of government authority and apply it to a Jewish government, not dealing with a non-Jewish government, but a Jewish government in the land of Israel. So you can't really draw directly on melech, on monarchy as a model, because the moment you try to say, well, a king can do it, therefore a democratically elected government can do it, you immediately say, well, what are you talking about? The king is not democratically elected. How do you become king? How does one become a king? Anointing is a ritual, but he has to be picked by, as we'll see, Navi and or Sanhedrin, right? A prophet and or the Sanhedrin. We'll see. The Rambam is going to say, and he's going to contradict himself, but all of the Rambam statements will involve some combination of those. So immediately, when you try to invoke king as a model, you're stuck. Because, you know, I'm pretty sure Netanyahu did not get selected by a Navi, did not get selected by a Sanhedrin. Even the Steinsaltz Sanhedrin, or whatever the new one. I don't think they picked him either. Yeah.
But the Rizvah's law goes in one, that type of thing.
Yeah, well, the Rizvah's one is way out there. Yeah, so, yeah.
So if it's that model, it wouldn't be.
Correct. I'm not turning to the Ritva's model either, though, because I don't understand the Ritva's model yet. We're going to have to come back to justify it. Because right now, the Ritva, for me, is just floating in space. I don't know where in the world he got that from.
The Mishnah says that the Kol Yisrael is B'nai Nevi'im.
Yes, we are B'nai Nevi'im. B'nai Nevi'im means we're a student Nevi'im. We haven't graduated yet.
No difference between a prime minister and a president? Because he said he knew.
I have just the same problem with the president. Maybe worse, depending on which presidential system you're working with. Is he a political appointee or is he elected? Right? In Israel, he's a political appointee. So the first step is we have to look briefly at Dina D'Malchusa Dina, the classic rule that says that the law of the government or the law of the land is the law. That's sort of our first step along this path towards, even though Dina D'Malchusa Dina is a rule we apply with a non-Jewish government, but that's our first step that will lead us to understand what the power of government is at all. So you remember the Gemara Bava Kamma, I didn't even bring it on the sheet because it's familiar, but when they're talking about the issue of tax collectors, and they distinguish between tax collectors who buy the right to collect taxes from the government, they're called tax farmers, and then they choose to tax people as they wish, versus somebody who is a government appointee, and there's a law, and it applies equally to everybody. He's not attacking any particular population, he's not playing favorites with his friends, and they say that the former, the one who's just doing whatever he wants, has no authority. He's a thief as far as halacha is concerned. That's the mochei she'en lo kitzba. Whereas, if he follows a set of rules and he applies them fairly and evenly across society, then Shmuel Paskins, Shmuel rules, Dina D'Malchusa Dina, the law of the land is the law and you have to follow it. So that's Bava Kamma Kafir Yimel Amad Aleph. The question is, where does that authority come from? And we have here five approaches. The first approach is probably the most famous one and the one that is least relevant in the land of Israel, and that is, this land is my land, right? That I hope that even though, you know, I'm not in America, people still know the song. This land belongs to the king, and the king is the one who's going to say what the rule is, and if you don't like it, leave. If you don't like what the king says, there are lots of other countries to choose from. Take a look at source number 2, one of the key sources on this, the Ran, his commentary to the Gemara Nedarim. The Kasvu B'Tosus, he quotes a Tosus. It's not Tosus on the Gemara in the Nedarim. It's not clear to me what the Tosus is that he is quoting. But he says, "Didavka v'malchei ode kochavim amar de dina de malchusa dina." He says, non-Jewish kings specifically are the ones for whom we say the law of the land is the law. Mivnei sha'aretz shalo, because it's his country. V'yachol lomar lohem, and he can say to them, "Im lo tasu mitzvosai, if you don't do what I say, agaresh eschem in aretz, I'm going to kick you out." That's all. Abba b'malcha Yisrael, but for Jewish kings, lo, you can't say that. L'fish eretz Yisrael, kol Yisrael shutfin ba, because all of us are joint owners of Israel. We all have four amos in eretz Yisrael. Where they are is a good question, but we all have four amos in the land, and therefore the secular king, therefore the Jewish king, is not able to kick us out. He's not able to say this land is my land. Joey.
So what if it was a king that was a despot and didn't allow?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's really contingent upon him letting you leave. That happens to be something he could say. But realistically, even if he jailed you for failing to follow, and he said you can't leave, there's an iron curtain and you're stuck here, nonetheless...
So but, in the iron curtain, you know,
yeah. So according to this, Dina de Malchus and Dina would indeed apply, with the caveat that Shmuel in the Gemara said where they apply rules unfairly. If they say we're gonna tax Jews at one level and everybody else at another level, then they lose their authority because it's not called Dina. It's not law anymore. Now it's just theft. But otherwise, the fact that they won't let you leave doesn't mitigate their authority. Yeah.
In that regard, is Dina still apply just not to the taxes but to every other aspect of the government?
That's a good question in its own right. What exactly are the parameters for Dina de Malchusa that we recognize as law? Might it only be for tax purposes in general? Maybe not only it's for tax purposes. Another theory is that it's only for laws that specifically benefit the government themselves. In other words, the king can make laws that benefit him personally and they're binding on me. But if he makes a law that has nothing to do with him, he makes speed limit laws, then they're not binding on me. Another view, which we're actually going to come back to, is that it's only laws that protect society. Because the source of his authority is protection of society, only those are binding. So that's going to be its own, you know, its own debate. The Rashba also brings this idea. If you take a look at source number 3, and this actually will go to your question a little bit, he says, Odani Omer, Shal Dineha Goyim, Lo. The word Lo belongs there. That kind of changes the complexion of the text when you add in a not. The Shal Dineha Goyim, Lo Amru Dina de Machusa Dina, Shein Amalek Makbed al Dinin Yiduin, Shezeh Bo Machadesh Mefarish Dina Mefidato, Besichlo Veacher Bo Mahavech Litvarav. He says, laws of the nation don't have Dina de Malchusa Dina because the king doesn't care about the grandfathered laws from the kings who came before him. The king doesn't care. Unless they are known laws established by the king himself in his authority. In other words, whatever was the law of the king that preceded him, the Rashba says, doesn't matter. The authority is invested in this king and what he cares about. If he doesn't care about it, it's not the law. If you have a king who says, I have a sports car and I believe in driving really fast and I don't care about speed limits, and yeah, I know the government before you put in speed limits, but I don't care about them. And when people complain to him, people are speeding on the roads, he says, wonderful. So at that point, it loses its authority. It's only invested in the king proper. He is the one with the authority. What he cares about endures. What he doesn't care about, trashy. Dustbin of history. That's it. That's all one theory of Dina de Malchusa Dina. The land belongs to the king, and he's the one who says. As long as he says evenly for everybody, it's valid. Second approach is that the government and really the society are doing a good thing by creating laws, and therefore we must honor those laws. In other words, one of the 7 Noahide laws applies to all human beings is create law. How could you instruct the nations of the world to create law and then not honor it? You're telling them they're required to create laws, but then you're telling me that their laws don't actually bind anybody. That's hypocritical. So if you take a look at Rashi, he says, this is source number 4, where he talks about the fact that we would not rely on the validity of a get arranged in a non-Jewish court. He says, why? Delavine krisis nu, because gittin has nothing to do with them. Havelo shaychi b'taras gittin v'kidushin. Avo al hadinin, but when it comes to dinin, it's tavumne noach. So they have the mitzvah, and therefore we have to follow, and we accept the validity of that which they dictate. Now I should note that there's a basic debate regarding the mitzvah of dinin. Right? There are 2 classic schools on the mitzvah of Dinin. What exactly does Dinin require non-Jews to create? So the view of the Rambam is it's very narrow. It's that the non-Jews have a mitzvah of creating laws which govern the 7 mitzvahs. So in other words, they should make laws saying don't kill people. They should make laws for protecting from theft. But they don't have to make laws about jaywalking. That's not in there, that's not within it, and therefore it wouldn't have Dina de Malchusa Dina status. However, Ramban is more global. Ramban says, it's in Bereishis Lamed Daled Yud Daled by the story with Sodom, Shem, that their Sheva Mitzvos is create broader laws for the sake of society. So that's your second, much more broad category. Your third basis for Dina de Malchusa Dina is that it's a function of Mishpatei Hamalucha. Mishpatei Hamalucha means the powers given to a Jewish king, and the theory is that just like a Jewish king has all sorts of powers, so too a non-Jewish king has all sorts of powers. That would be the a third approach to it. Now, of course, there's a lot of debate as to what the extent of Jewish powers are. Meaning that when Shmuel tells the people, you know, if you appoint a king, he can take your children and press them into his service, he can take your land, he can do whatever he wants, there's a machlokas, there's a debate in the Gemara as to whether Shmuel was serious or whether he was just intimidating them. Nonetheless, there is, everybody agrees, there's a concept of the powers of a Jewish king, and one way to look at the law of the land is to say that there are also powers for a non-Jewish king, and that they are they're parallel to the powers that a Jewish king has. The Meiri says this in source number 5. Look at what he has to say. Komasha amarnu b'din amalchus shu etzlenu din gamur hu bechukim shechakak hein letoalto hein letoelas nechasav afilu chakak shehei kol adam nosel okach v'kach v'shana okach v'kach v'maso umatano. He says everything that we have described of the powers of a king is law. Whether it's for his personal gain, whether it's for the benefit of his treasury, even if he simply makes a law saying everybody has to give me a certain amount every year, or a certain percentage of his income, or kol sheyaseh kach yitol amelch imenu kach v'kach, he makes fines. Whoever does X, the king is taking a certain amount from him. O kol shekayotze bazeh, or anything like it. Av apishu kineged dinin shalanu. Even if what the king legislates is against our laws, din who? It's the law. V'asur legozlo, you're not allowed to steal from him. O lavro mashetikein, then you're not allowed to violate his laws. Shekachu roi lo mitzad malchuso. That's his power of monarchy, and here's the key. Derech ha'amur b'malcha Yisrael, just like we say regarding Jewish kings, kol ha'amur b'parshas melech melech mutar bo. Everything that Shmuel says a king can do, a king is allowed to do. V'zeo shomer dina d'malchusa v'lo amer dina d'malka. And that's why we say it's the law of monarchy and not the law of this king. This is the rule that kings are able to do. Is everyone following? I mean, this is fairly straightforward as things go. Your third basis for the authority of the government is Jewish kings have authority, non-Jewish kings have have authority too. Fourth out of the five is that it's about protecting society. You're protecting society. The government has the right to make rules that will protect society. And the Rashba mentions this in source number 6, where he's dealing with a case in which the government instituted that there had to be gates in certain parts of the city. And the question was, the Jewish community is being required to kick in money for those gates. Do we recognize this, that the government actually has the authority to do this? And he says, Achshav sheyesh l'malchei ha'umos banu meluchah. He says, now the nations have authority over us. Uma gamsha shukim varachovos heim lemalachim. He says the markets, the streets, they're all owned by the king. Veimichum lizgor velivnos varachovos here. They're allowed to close and to build the gates of the city. Vechein anu roan osam noagin kain. We see them doing this. Im nasan hamelach leelu. It should say probably lehamid lehem delasos osim. If the king says they should set up gates, they do it. The dina de malchus adina. That's the law of the land. And now, in the interest of time, I'm going to jump, and he says, in Cain, towards the end of the source, Mashet Siva Hamelach Lazos Pesachud Lasayim Bemza Shchuna Leshmiras Ha'am Harshus Biado. If he says you need gates here to protect the city, to protect the population, he has the right to do it. And in the middle part, he talked about the Jewish kings and their ability to do this. But the Rashba says he has the right to protect society, and I'll show you how far this goes. It's a Gemara in Shavuos in source number 7. Amar Shmuel. Shmuel says, Malchusa dekat lo chad mishisa ba'alma. If the government kills 1/6 of the population, 1/6 of the population, which we know to be 20% in Talmudic math, right? Milagav and milavar. 1/6 ends up being 20%. If you don't know what that means, just take it as a given. But I save you a headache. If the government kills 1/6 of the population, lo me'ansha, they aren't punished for it. How do you know? Shir Hashirim. Shnemar Pasuk says, Karmi shali lefanai, ha'elef lecha shalomo. L'malchusa d'irikia. He's taking Shlomo to be a reference to Hashem in Shir HaShirim. And he says, there are 1,000 in the vineyard for God, for Shlomo. Umasayim lenodrimis pirio. And 200 of the 1,000, 20%, for those who guard his fruit. That's the angaria, the people who do the work for the king. That's l'malchusa d'ara. That's for the government down here on earth. So in other words, what the Gemara says is, the government has within its rights to employ the population in service, even if 20% of the people die in the service of the government. And this is Gemara in Shavuos. This is Bar Bet Chasim Sofer in Chelek. Hey, Choshem Mishpa Mem Dalet. So what we've said so far are 4 out of 5. Number one, the land belongs to the king. Number two, you have to honor it because they are fulfilling their mitzvah by creating laws, and therefore you have to honor them. They're doing their mitzvah. So you have to honor the laws that they create under that mitzvah. Third approach is, just like Jewish kings have power, non-Jewish kings are assigned analogous power. Fourth approach is, they're protecting society, and therefore their laws are binding. What's left? What's going to be the fifth one? You know what the fifth one's going to be. It's the most modern idea out of all of them, although it goes back to the Gemara of Bava Basra. What's left in terms of the source of authority of the monarchy? Sorry? Well, now, that we already said. They're protecting the society. Sorry? Pesach, you said it? Somebody said it. I heard it somewhere here. The people themselves. Social contract. The population said, we decided that we would like to follow this person, and therefore you're chayav to follow him. The Gemara of Abashra in source number 8, Rashrim b'nei ha'ir lahasnos alamidos v'alasha'arim. The population is allowed to make rules, conditions, regarding the weights and measures that are used. V'alschar po'olim, there were the measures and the prices, technically. V'alschar po'olim, how much workers should be paid. U'lahasiyal kitzasan, and they are allowed to compel part of the population that doesn't want to go along with it, that they should go along with it. And the Rashbam applies this to Dina de Malchusa Dina in source number 9. V'amar Shmuel, Dina de Malchusa Dina, the Rashbam writes, Kol misim v'arnonios u'minhagos shal mishpatei malachim sh'regil mahanik b'malchusam, all of the taxes of various kinds that the kings enact, Dina hu, it is the law, shekol b'nei ha-malchus mekabla maleya meritzonam chukei ha-melech u'mishpatav, because all the people in the society willingly accept the rules of the king. I think willingly here, maybe like Kofanos Vashioma Rotsa Ani with the get, you know, willingly. The king said it, I will it, because otherwise my head will be separated from my shoulders. Therefore, I willingly accept it. Nonetheless, that's what he writes. And he says, Din Gamuru, that is indeed the law, and Rav Moshe applied this. Rav Moshe Feinstein applied this in a case involving a tenant who did not want to leave the apartment that he was in. And the law protected the rights of the tenant. And the landlord said, I want my apartment back. So Rav Moshe said, I'm sorry. Source number 10. Vada lo gara dina malchus mi minog shebistama huki hisnu, sorry, mi minog shebistama huki hisnu adaita de dina malchus. He says, we assume that when you go into business and you sign a contract, you accept upon yourself that you're going to follow the terms that the government has within the land. V'kolshkin shkeinoagin kidina medina. He says, certainly where it's not even the minhag, but it's what the government says, that's what we assume everybody goes along with. Now, he doesn't address there, what if you had stipulated otherwise in your contract? That's a whole other discussion. What if you stipulated we are not working with Dina de Malchusa, and the government may be fine with that? In many situations, the government is good with you dictating your own terms for your personal agreements. Not always, but there is such a thing. All right. So we have 5 different sources for the authority of the government. Which of those rules cannot apply to a Jewish population living in Israel? Which one of these rules do not make any sense? One we already identified. The first one, right? The Ran already told you the idea that the government owns the land is irrelevant if you're dealing with a government in Israel. They do not own the land. That's one. Which other one can you exclude? Right. The idea that the government is fulfilling a mitzvah by creating these laws doesn't apply if you're dealing with Jews, because even though I played it fast and loose and said there are 7 laws that apply to all human beings, the truth of the matter is the law of Dinim is for non-Jews. What is the law for Jews? Shovtim v'shodrim. There is a mitzvah in the Torah. It's mitzvah Tatzadi Aleph in the Sefer HaChinuch. I brought it for you in source number 11. There is indeed a mitzvah of appointing judges, but not for them to legislate. for them to enforce the existing laws of the Torah. They don't have a mitzvah of legislation. If you look at what it says, Limnos shoftim b'shotim she'achmichu lasos mitzvos ha-Torah v'yachziru anotim miderach emes eleh ba'al korcham. It's to guide people to make sure they're going to follow the Torah. It's not for them to make new laws. They may have to find people and do things, you know, at a case-by-case basis, but there's no mitzvah of creating legislation in the same way that there would be for non-Jews. So those two are out. The remaining possibilities are that a government, a secular government in Israel, may have mishpatei melucha, parallel to the laws of a king, or they may have protection of society, that they have the power to protect society, or they may have social contract. And we're going to go through each of these three and see different visions of what government is really all about. Pesach, you're... Yeah, I'm also going to, well, I'll take the opportunity to pass around the sign-in sheet. If anyone wants to get afterwards the link for the audio, or if anyone wants to know about and get notification when we do another mini-series, God willing, so make sure that you sign in. If you don't have to enter your email address if you receive these sheets. That means that I have your email address. Yes, sorry, Beza. If we're giving, say this again.
You said that the non-Jewish king has power, puts them in the same Jewish king's power, so non-Jewish king's power.
Okay.
So how does that
give me? So that's what we're going to have to see. But I think it's easier to other Jews. It's much. It's
the same way you are. You show it to the Shulchan, but there's a similar show to the Shulchan in the Torah on how Jews compare. That kind of thing. One could argue.
Well, we'll see. But I think the argument may be that Jewish king to Jewish democratically elected leader may be closer than Jewish king to non-Jewish king. The question really is, goes back to where does the Jewish king's authority come from and which way is it more portable? So the first approach that we're going to take is indeed the approach that it's mishpatei melucha. The king has powers, and those powers go to the community, and from there to the community's elected leadership. That's the idea. There are powers that can be invested in the nation, and the first one to really present this is Rabbeinu Nissim, the Ran. We already saw the Ran say, this land is my land, but now he has a different idea that he says in the Drashos HaRan. Drasha Yad Aleph, source number 12. Look at what he has to say. Bisman Sheyu be Yisrael Sanhedrin Umelech. When we have a court and a king, v'hasanhedrin im lishpot esam v'mishpat tzedek levad. The job of the court is just to use the normal system of justice. Lo l'tikun inyanam b'yarsim izeh. No more than that. Im lo sheyitin amelech lem kochom. Unless the king gives them greater powers. The job of a Sanhedrin normally is carry out Torah law. Abo kasher lo yi a melech bi Yisrael, but when there's no king, hashofet yichol shnei hakochos, koach hashofet v'koach hamelech, then the judge gets two powers, judicial powers and extrajudicial powers. All those things that a king can do are actually meant to take care of the community, and when you lose a king, then those powers devolve to the Sanhedrin. And you see it in the Gemara in Sanhedrin in source number 13. Remember this story about the trial of Avner for killing Amasa. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin says that Avner says, I was justified in killing Amasa because he had rebelled against the king. Amasa is a morid b'malchus. Amar le, Amasa morid b'malchus haba. So the Gemara then replies and says, Amar le, Amasa achin v'rakin darash. Amasa had a reason for not fulfilling the royal order, because the royal order was illegal. And Amasa said, it's against the Torah, therefore I don't have to follow it. Amasa achin v'rakin darash. He deduced it from the use of the word rak, in particular in a pasuk, and the asmachta, the lesson is brought here in number 13, but I'll explain it outside. He says that when Hashem says, regarding Yoshua, rak chazak ve'ematz, only be strong, the statement is only, because if he violates Torah law, then he should not be strong. Then his laws will not be binding. So Yehoshua's power is limited, says the Gemara. Only his word is only binding if it's not against the Torah. That That's what the Gemara here says. So the Ran says, hold up a minute. You're applying the laws of Morid B'Malchus to Yehoshua? Who's the first Melech? Shaul HaMelech is the first Melech. We never say Yehoshua HaMelech. How did Yehoshua have the power? And not only that, we're going to see later on, we actually learn the existence of the laws of Morid B'Malchus from Yehoshua. When they say to Yehoshua, anybody who rebels against you will die, that's the source of the laws from Morid B'Malchus. I don't understand, Yehoshua wasn't a king. Says the Ran, Yehoshua was the repository of royal authority in his day. Because there was no king. So Yehoshua had the powers without being a melech, Rafi.
Yeah. What assumes as far as the power of melech, or the power of Malchus, does one have to have the actual title of K-I-N-G? Or does the person just have to...
So the answer is no.
The person has to be the leader.
Correct. His name need not be king. Rav Kook made the same argument, moving ahead to the 20th century. Rav Kook made the same argument. He shows you, first of all, I brought it here in number 14, the apparent discrepancies in number 14 first, the apparent discrepancies between the different ways in which the Rambam talks about appointing a king. In Hilchos Malach and Perek Aleph Halacha Ches, the Rambam writes, Navi Shehem in Melech Mishar Shivta Yisrael, if a Navi appoints a king who's not from Yehuda, nonetheless, if the king does what kings are supposed to do, he still has royal authority. So there it's the Navi appointing the king. Then, in Hilchos Malach and Perek Aleph Halacha Gimel, he shows you, Ein Ma'amid in Melech Betchila El Alpi Beitzin Shal Shivim Zekeinim Ve'Alpi Navi. You need a Sanhedrin, and a Navi, and a prophet to appoint a king. Now, the word betchila is assumed by Rav Kook to mean lichatchila. In other words, you can't appoint a king lichatchila without these, Navi and Sanhedrin. But then you look in Hilchos Sanhedrin, and it says, Ein ma'amidin melech el al pi beis din shel shivim biyachad. You need a court of 71 judges. He says nothing about Navi there at all in Hilchos Sanhedrin. Now, the truth is, left to my own devices, I would have explained this easily.
Are you in
Lachim? No, I'm now in Sanhedrin Hey Aleph. I would have explained this much more simply than Rav Kook does. I would have said it's because in Hilchos Sanhedrin, he's simply defining which kind of a court you need for the appointment of a king. He's not saying we don't need a Navi, but he's saying what is the Beis Din piece of it? It's a Beis Din of 71, because you read the rest of his line, and he talks about other laws regarding Sanhedrin. So that actually would have satisfied me. But take a look then at Sanhedrin Dalet Yud Gimel. He talks about the Rashi Galios in Bavel, which is when there's no Sanhedrin anymore, which is when there's no Navi anymore. And he says, B'makom melech hein omdin, they stand in the place of a king. V'yeshan lirdos es Yisrael b'chol makom, they reign over the Jews wherever they are. Lidon aleihem, they can judge them. Bein ratzu, bein lo ratzu, whether we like it or not. So what in the world do I do with the Rambam saying, you need a Navi, you need a Navi and a band of Sanhedrin, you need a Sanhedrin, and the exilarch in Babel has power of a king anyway, without any of the above. How do I make sense of this? So Rav Kook writes, if you take a look at source number 15, Niran Advarim, it appears to him, Shebizman Shein Melech, when there is no king, Kamen Shemishpate Amaluchim Gamkin Mashnogea Lematsava Kalishal Hauma, since the laws of the monarchy affect the general status of the population, the welfare of the country, Chosrim Elaz Chuyos Shalamishpatim Liyad Hauma Bichlala. These powers go back to the nation as a whole. He says every shofet we had the status of a king. As far as various powers of the king, especially that which relates to the nation as a whole. But then he says, even specific personal things like the right to marry a concubine. The Rambam says that only a king is allowed to marry a concubine, but we find it among the shoftim. So there's a whole discussion about this, you know, regarding this question of who could marry a Pelegish, and what about the Shofim? And the answer is, it's okay, because the Shofet is a Melech, as far as the Rambam is concerned. That's the way that he formulates it. That's his statement. If you look at his last line, as far as the status of a king guiding the nation, he says, shoftim who reign by popular agreement, general Nisi'im. A Nasi here doesn't mean Nasi of a Shevet. He means in his day. A Nasi, a political leader today who gets elected, they have the same status. They stand in the place of a king. So writes Rav Kook. Rav Kook does not quote the Drash Hos Haran, which I found odd, because Drash Hos Haran is so clearly the antecedent for this idea. He goes the Rambam route. Rav Shaul Yisraeli, though, did build it on the Drash Hos Haran. He argued that not only does Yahushua have the status of a melech, but Moshe had the status of a melech.
Of course.
Well, Moshe didn't like it.
he
might have been, yeah, now he might have been making an allegation, but it's a Gemara in Zvachim. What do I need Korach for? You bring me Raya's from Chumash. Omer Ula. Ula says, Bikesh Moshe Malchus Velo Nasano Lo. Moshe asked for monarchy, says Ula, and it wasn't given to him. God didn't give it to him. And he goes on to bring you a source. And Rava says, what are you talking about? Don't you know, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Yevam HaMelech. Rava talks about the joy of Elisheva Bas Aminadav on the day when the Mishkan was dedicated, because all these different members of her family had great power. And Elisheva marries Aharon, and Aharon is the Kohen Gadol, and Moshe is this, and her grandson Pinchas is that. By the way, if you read Toronto Torah this week, you'll see in the mitzvah category there's a conundrum there, which is going to be relevant for Parshas Pinchas. Pinchas becomes a Kohen when? Year 40, right? He becomes Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Now you're a Kohen. However, he is, according to this Gemara in Zvachim, the Mashuach Melchama, on the day when they dedicate the Mishkan, which is in year 2. How can you be a Kohen Mashuach Melchama and not a Kohen? So the Torah Tamimah's answer is, I'm going to blow it for you, but read the columns, I wrote more there. The Torah Tamimah's answer is that these are Midrashim Chalukos. One Midrash doesn't agree with the other. But the Rashbam says, no, you can be a Mashuach Muhammad without being a Kohen. The term Kohen, there in the Psukim in Parsha Shoftim, when it says, the Kohen will get up and address the nation, just means one who serves. It doesn't mean Kohen, part of the family of Kohenim. That's a side note. In any case, here we see that one of the people who's listed as being a great power on the day of the Mishkan is dedicated is Moshe. Moshe is the Yavam of Elisheva Bas Aminadav, and he was Melech, he was king. And Rava answers for Ula, and he says, we meant king in some ways, not others. The point is that Moshe has certain royal status. Yoshua as well is considered to be a quasi-melech. The Rambam writes in source number 17, I alluded to this before, that the power of killing a rebel against the throne, killing a Mord B'Malchus, is learned from Yehoshua. So Yoshua has the status of a melech. So Rav Shaul Yisraeli said, absolutely. He said, I'll go on further. What about the Chashmonaim? The Chashmonaim had the power of Melech. We find that in various cases, the Chashmonaim had the power of Melech. There is no Sanhedrin by their time. There's no Navi, says Rav Kook. We know there's no Navi, but Rav Kook says there's no Sanhedrin that's appointing them. And I'll go, even though we find Sanhedrin later on, nonetheless, Rav Kook says there's no Sanhedrin that's appointing them. And he says, what about Agrippus? Right, the Gemara talks about Agrippus as a melech. They talk about how the Agrippus read, he did hakel, standing up, and everybody praised him for doing it, because as a melech, he really could have sat down. Agrippus? No, Sanhedrin was appointing Agrippus as a melech. It can't be. And he says, I'll take it another step. If you take a look at source number 18, Omri, the father of Achav. Az Yechalek Ha'am Yisrael. We'll go one better. We'll bring a proof from Tanakh. Az Yechalek Ha'am Yisrael Lachetzi. Chatzi Am Hayachrei Tivni Ben Ginas Lamlicha V'Hachetzi Achav V'Hachetzi Achavrei Omri. Half the nation wants to appoint Tivni. One half of the nation wants to appoint Omri. V'Yechazak Ha'am Asherachrei Omri Az Ha'am Asherachrei Tivni Ben Ginas. The ones that followed Omri overpowered Tivni's supporters. V'Yom Az Tivni V'Yimloch Omri. Tivni dies, and Omri becomes king. And Omri, we know, is recognized as a king. And his son Achav is king after him, apparently by popular acclaim. Further, Rav Yisraeli notes, the Ramban says so in source number 19. When the Pasuk says, pick a king, Asher Yivchar Hashem Elokecha, pick a king who Hashem, your God, will choose. So Ramban makes a brilliant point. I'll say it outside first. The Pasuk says, pick a king who Hashem will choose. What does it say right after that? Bali Kriya. Asher Yibchar Hashem Elokecha Habo. The next bit is Lo Suchal Lo Seis Alecha Ish Nachri. Right? You may not place a foreigner upon you. Asher Lo Achicha Hu. So pick somebody as a king. Don't pick a foreigner. Right? That's what the pasuk says. Tell me something. If a king is only sent to you via Navi, why do you need a mitzvah of don't pick a foreigner? Let God not send a Navi to appoint a foreigner and you're done. Right? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And that's Ramban's point. So Ramban writes, if you take a look here, he says, if it's supposed to be al pinavi, imkein matam lahazir lo suchal aseis alachish nachri. Why does it need to say, don't pick a foreigner? Vashem lo yivchav nachri. God won't pick a nachri, you won't have any problems. The answer is that there was a hidden condition here. Yomar Sam Tasim Alecha, it says, put upon yourself Hamelech Sheyivcha Hashem Bo, Im Tuchalasos King, Sheyancha Hashem Neviim. If God sends you Neviim, that's the one. The one that Avi chooses is going to be your king. But you can never choose a Nachri, even when there is no Navi to select a king. In other words, in the absence of a king, of a Navi, you pick the king yourself, and there are rules about the person you can pick. So Rav Yisraeli, citing this idea from the Drashos Haran, and Rav Kook, as a separate chain, basing himself on the Rambam, take the view that the king's powers devolve upon the community in the absence of a king, and whoever the nation chooses is going to be the one who has the power. The Tzitz Eliezer of Eliezer Waldenberg interestingly quoted the Shalah saying the same thing. I didn't bring it here. I thought I had enough sources on the sheet. But the Tzitz Eliezer quotes the Shalah saying that that's correct. So the first approach of the three. The approaches 2 and 3 will be shorter. But the first approach of the three says the king's powers go to the community. That's the way we look at it. And what that really means, fundamentally, is that our government is supposed to be a monarchy. In the absence of a monarch, so okay, the community will do it. But it really places authority in the monarchy primarily.
Who has a right to vote?
So the question then is, first, before we ask the question of who has a right to vote, the question is, can you have a secular king? Because today's government is not only not a king, but it's a secular government. There may be religious Jews who are in it, but it's fundamentally a secular government. Can you have such a government? The Rambam would clearly say no. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Melachim Perek Aleph Halacha Zayin that he wants your king to be somebody who is observant of mitzvahs, and he says that the person is not. You shouldn't put him in charge of anything. That's the Rambam's position. But Rabbi Yisraeli thinks so. And he says, look at Achav and Omri. Right? If they can be king, and Omri is king by popular acclaim, not by Sanhedrin, then I guess that means that he can indeed have that authority. And then you have Agrippus as the example, which I bring you in number 20, but we mentioned it earlier. If Agrippus can be king, then yeah, the guy doesn't have to be a tzaddik in order to be recognized as king. Who gets to vote, we'll talk about. But that's the idea. And here on this, we come back to that weird ritva in the Shita Mekubetz about Rav Elazar Rabbi Shimon. If the population accepts that this person is in fact going to be the authority, that this person is going to be the king, then he has the power, the Mishpate Melucha. And that seems to be what the Ritva is talking about, and that's what empowers Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon to do as he does. So that's all one school. That is the school of that really reduces the power of the community and just says the community is where the king's powers go temporarily in the absence of a king. Second school says the opposite. We'll get to the opposite. The second school says that government's role is to be the police. The government role is to protect society. And that may be a king, but really the source of the authority of the king is in society. It goes in the opposite direction. Not there's a king and the king is great, then if there's no king, then this community gets his power. But rather, the community has the power and chooses to give it to a king. But if there's no king, then they can give the power to somebody else, because it's fundamentally about protecting society. And this is actually seen in Ramban. If you take a look at source number 21, he quotes a Medrash. Rabbi Akiva Omer, this is on the pasuk that says, "Kol cherem asher yacharam min ha'adam mos yumas." Anytime there is a cherem declared, which he takes to mean a decree declared, and a person violates the community's decree, the person is put to death. Says the Medrash that he quotes here, "Hacherem huashvua vashvua cherem." These oaths that the community declares—that's what we're talking about. And he talks about Anshe Yavesh Gilad, the people of Yavesh Gilad who disobey Shaul. So Avruah Lacherem, they violated the decree. V'nischevu misa, and they were liable for death. And based on that, Ramban says, "Ulekachani Omer." From this pasuk that says that if a person violates the communal cherem, they die. He says that's where the source is for kings to make law and for the Sanhedrin to make law. It's because the Torah says that the community can make laws that are binding. That is what empowers the king, and that is what empowers the Sanhedrin. But fundamentally, it starts with the community, writes Ramban. It's not quite social contract. We're going to get to social contract, and I'll explain the difference in a minute. It's not quite social contract. It's that the community is meant to protect itself with these haramim, and they can empower somebody to do that. The Chasam Sofer takes this view. The Chasam Sofer asks the question, I brought it number 22, but I'll say it outside of the source, you can see it there. He's really bothered. He says, you're trying to tell me, we've already said, that the power of killing those who rebel against the throne starts with the Oshua, right? What about the rule of Ein Navi Rashi L'Chadesh Davar? You can't create new laws in Nach. What do you mean? They just decided in Yehoshua's time, new law. Someone rebels against the king, gets killed. He says, I don't understand. And it's not mentioned in the powers of the king that are outlined in the Torah. In Parashat Shoftim, it doesn't say, if anybody rebels against the king, he's going to be put to death. It doesn't make any sense. So he quotes the Ramban that I brought you in number 21, and he says, that's the source for the law of Morid B'Malchus. Because the community is allowed to make decrees and say, there's a death penalty if you break the law. That is what they did with Yahushua, and that's what they do with kings in general. And he says, the idea really is that the community is responsible to legislate the safety of the public. And if you look in the second paragraph, or the third paragraph, I guess, in number 22, he says, Ad kan higati adin melech, v'nirali, dirishus biyad hamanhigim larog velanosh mikra v'haya alecha damim. He quotes you another pasuk. The pasuk says that if you have if somebody doesn't build a maked, they don't build a wall against their roof, and somebody falls and dies, it's the responsibility of the owner of the property who should have prevented it. He says that's a communal thing, that the community has the ability to put to kill people and to punish people in order to protect society. And he links it to the Gemara Moed Katan Daf Hei. And he writes something remarkable. Take a look. It's the second line in the last paragraph of number 22. Umistama gam ilo nitna Torah. Even if the Torah had not been given, the kodem matan Torah hayudinim benimosim, and there were laws in place before the Torah was given. V'chom melech v'mishpayam et eretz, with every king establishing the land using justice. Parenthetical reference to the Ramah. V'nitna Torah v'chitsha eila mishpatim v'kavachol ganav yishan kefal shortam chatinizko shomrim kach v'kach, and then the Torah came along and presented us a whole bunch of other laws governing our interactions. Mashallah hiskira Torah. Whatever the Torah did not mention, kikon hezek shenu nikar lo huter chalila. Let me say it outside rather than translate it word for word. What he's saying is, imagine that Hammurabi had dictated a bunch of laws to govern society. And they covered categories which, when the Torah was given to us, the Torah didn't mention anything. Not in favor of, not against. The Torah simply didn't speak to those areas. Hammurabi's laws would be in force. That's the idea that he expresses. Those laws would pertain as long as the Torah doesn't uproot them. Those laws remain because you need to have a society which functions safely. And if those laws are protecting society, then those are the laws that you work with until society comes up with other laws to protect themselves. That's the idea. Rafi.
Yeah, quick question. Speaking about Hammurabi, what happens when a law, on a literal level, is the exact same law as what the Torah says, but the rabbinic interpretation of the law is very different from the literal interpretation of the law? Case in point, Hammurabi, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth.
Right. So the answer would be that the Torah empowers the Rabbanan to be the translators of law, and therefore whatever they say the Pasuk means is what the Pasuk means.
Right, but I'm just saying, where would Hammurabi's law...
Sorry, I apologize to Hammurabi, but he's not going to win. The notwithstanding the fact that I have had times when I wish that he was right, nonetheless, the...
Silent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the so you have two principles so far. First principle is the first approach is Drashos Haran and so on, right? Rav Yisraeli, Rav Kook, the Shalah, that the king has power. No king, so that power goes to society, but fundamentally we're really king-governed. The second approach flips it on its head and says the society has the power to protect itself. They can appoint a king and delegate those authorities to him, or they can keep the authority for themselves. However, and this is the key in why it's not social contract, it's only in terms of that which protects society. It doesn't give broader options to society to create whatever laws they want. It's only a matter of the protection of the community, b'haya alecha damim, that pasuk that we mentioned here, being the focus. However, there's a third school of thought, and this is the approach taken by Rav Shlomo Gorin, as well as Rav Asher Weiss, more recently, and that is the social contract approach, which said that government is not the protector of society, government is the voice of society. And whatever society wants to declare as its laws, again, you can't run counter to Torah. But whatever society wishes to dictate within the bounds of Torah is going to be binding. He points to, Rav Gorin points to a remarkable comment in the Rashba. Take a look at source number 23. The Rashba writes, someone had written him this whole pamphlet. So he says, I went through everything you had to say in your pamphlet. Well, remember how many people sent pamphlets to the Rashba? Probably a lot. He says, I went through everything you wrote in your pamphlet. And he says, as far as I am concerned, Ro'ani she'im ha'edim ne'aman ha'meitzel ha'berurim rashoyim hein liknos knas mamon o'onish ha'guf ha'kol ha'bima she'yirah lahem v'zeh mekayim ha'olam. He says, if the judge is selected by the two sides in this case that he's dealing with, if they believe the witnesses, they can issue fines and punishments whatever they believe is necessary. He says, if you're going to stick only to Torah law, and you're only going to give the punishments that the Gemara in Sanhedrin outlines, the world will be in ruins. Because you would need witnesses and you would need warnings and you never end up punishing anybody. This is a wild spin on that Gemara. Usually the way this Gemara is read is that people only went to the letter of the law. They wouldn't go beyond the letter of the law in terms of being kind to others. Usually we read it as condemnation that they didn't go lefnim yishuras hadin for others. That's not what the Rashba says it means. He says Yerushalayim is destroyed because they didn't make the laws necessary to protect society beyond din Torah. And he says, Koshkin b'chutzal ha'aretz, and certainly outside of Israel, where you don't have dinei knasos, and people are breaking the law left and right, and they're hurting other people, you need to create legislation. So said the Rashba. And that's what Rav Gorin draws on. Now, you guys, you have to ask a question, which really Rabbi Ziering, I think, dealt with in one of his shiurim. Isn't this a problem of Erkos? If you create your own laws and your own courts, isn't that a problem of Erkos? It's like a secular court. And you're flouting Torah law by going to a secular court. So he says, absolutely not. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, in source number 24, speaks of the possibility of Erkos Shebesuria, the Erkos in Syria, literally, and says that they're valid, but there's a discussion about whether one side can disqualify and say, I don't accept those Erkos Shebesuria. So he says, clearly they have to be Jewish. Erkos Shebesuria. If they're not Jewish, then it's an Erkos problem. It's a secular court. You're not allowed to go to a secular court. So these are Jews we're talking about. What are they? So Rashi says, I brought in a number 25, that these are judges who are not expert in halacha. So they have standing unless you reject them. However, the Ran says that can't be. How in the world could you ever accept judges who are not expert in halacha? What kind of a game are you playing? That's not what you're talking about. It'll be wickedness, he says, to accept them. Rather, the Ran says, well, there's this review of Rabbeinu David. Rabbeinu David says these are people who are general population people, and you assume someone in the group knows what he's doing. But then the Ran says, no, that can't be. He goes back to Rashi's idea. And he says, I'll tell you what's going on with these Erkos Shebesuria who are accepted in the Gemara. It's source number 26, the paragraph that begins, Valinira. He says, you know what happens? You have people who live in a place where they don't have judges who are B'nai Torah. So what do? The people accept for themselves that they are going to accept judges who are not people who know the laws of the Torah, and they're going to follow them, and they're not going to disqualify them. And the Rabbanan said, you can't disqualify them. Once the community accepts them, they have authority over the community. Where does the authority come from? Social contract. What do you mean? Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, so it's a social contract idea, and now, once again, you can accept a secular one, that's what the Arkowski is, you can accept something secular just as well. All three of these legal theories work to accept a secular authority as well. The question, though, goes back now to what you asked before, what Jeff asked in the beginning, which is, who gets to vote on this, and how do you do your vote? So I brought you on the last side the Maharam Bar Baruch, who gets quoted in the Haggadah Maimonides. And he says, they're dealing with a question, there's a fight in the community, and they're trying to figure out what to do, disposition of community assets, and so forth. And he said, the rule is, majority vote of all dues payers of the community. That's the answer. Kol bali batim, on his second line. Kol bali batim shenosnim misim. All people who pay dues to the community, all taxpayers, get to vote, and it is a majority rule, is his statement. And the Rama paskins that way in source number 29. He says, Kol tzarchei tzibur she'en yachon lahashvaz atzman. Anytime there are communal needs and they can't all agree, yesh lahushiv kol bali batim hanosnim mas. So you call a meeting of all the people who pay dues, v'yikablu aleim, and they accept. Shekol echad. They have to accept that everybody will speak lishma. They have to speak altruistically. Good luck. And then you follow the majority. But that's the way it works. So we have three different theories of defending a secular government. Now, what we didn't do is present the other side. In other words, I presented three arguments in favor of, because we had an hour and not, 3 hours. But the first theory is that government authority, going back to Dina de Malchusadina, is like Mishpatei Melucha for Jewish kings. It's simply the power of the throne, and in the absence of a king, so that it goes to the leaders of the community. The second approach is that it's a matter of protecting society. Government is meant to protect society, that's the king's job, and if there's no king, so you elect others who will do that role. The third approach is no. The government is the voice of the people themselves. It's a democratic approach, fundamentally, and they can choose whoever they want. Now, there's one major caveat, and with that I'll close, and that's the Gemara in Sanhedrin in source number 30. The Gemara talks about Kesher Rishaim, literally a bond of wicked people. And the Gemara says, Kesher Rishaim Eino Min HaMinyan, a bond of wicked people doesn't count. Literally. So the Gemara says, what is Kesher Rishaim? And they go back to a story from Tanakh involving Shavna and Chizkiah. Shavna habadarish betleis haravasa. Shavna used to give shiurim and 12... Shavna used to give shiurim and 130,000 people would show up. Remember that Tosfos in Bava Basra says that very often 12,000 and 13,000 are used as just to mean really big numbers. So I wouldn't get hung up on 130,000 people hearing Shavna give shir. The Chizki Avadarish Bechatzah Rav Vasa. Chizki Rachmanus, he only had 110,000 people show up. So Sancheirib comes, lays siege to Yerushalayim. Shavna writes a note, shoots an arrow out with a note, saying, I and my people are willing to make peace with you, Sancheirib. Chizki and his crew are not willing to make peace. And he quotes the pasuk in Tehillim, the Rishayim extend the bow, they fire the arrow. Chizkiah is very upset. He says, maybe Hashem is on Shavna's side. After all, the majority, right? You follow the majority. So maybe God is with Shavna. That's what he said. And then the Navi comes along. This is Yeshaya. And they quote the pasuk in Yeshaya, Lo somrun kesher l'chol asher yomar ha'amazeh kesher. Don't say it's a bond every time the nation says it's a bond. There are pacts that are not to be honored. Klomer, Kesher Rishra Mu, but Kesher Rishra Menu Menem Minyan. There is such a thing as a governor on this, so to speak, and saying you can't just do whatever you want and say, well, society voted. We think that this is good for society. There has to be some level of fealty to Torah, and that's going to be the major monkey wrench in all of this. When you talk about accepting a secular government, there can be one motivated by the powers of the king, motivated by protecting society, motivated by the social contract. But fundamentally, there is going to always be this rule that says you can't overpower the rules of the Torah. Those are fundamentally, you have to be answerable to that. So I hope that this gave somewhat of an introduction to the topic. I apologize for racing a lot with it, but I wanted to make sure to get this in. God willing, we'll speak about having future shiur. I'm also hoping to have maybe some...